Case is Unilock versus Apple with Electronic Frontier Foundation as an intervenor, appellee, 2021-1568. Mr. Jacobs, when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Aaron Jacobs, and I represent the Unilock appellants. Your Honors, as this Court recognized the last time these cases were here, and as this Court recognized in Apple versus Samsung, the question of whether documents may be filed under seal is a question for local circuit law. And in the Ninth Circuit, this law is clear. The Ninth Circuit, in In Re Electronic Arts, found that a district court abused its discretion for refusing to seal, quote, pricing terms, royalty rates, and guaranteed minimum payment terms found in a license agreement which were plainly within the definition of trade secrets. This opinion has been cited more than 100 times in the Northern District of California alone, including, as noted in our briefs, scores upon scores of times specifically to seal patent licensing information, including by the judge on appeal today. The same day this opinion that is on appeal was issued, the same day, Judge Gonzalez-Rogers, also of the Northern District of California, considered sealing some of the same materials. And she, like those scores upon scores of other opinions, recognized that those documents should be filed under seal because...
So what's the error? Is it an error of law because the district judge here talked about the public interest in a patent extending to who it's licensed to and what the royalty rates are? Is that an error of law?
Yes, Judge Lawyer, there were a number of errors. That's one of them. In particular, that was a mistake of law. The district court was simply wrong. To begin with, as the Ninth Circuit and scores of Northern District of California judges have concluded, licensing terms are trade secrets and they should be filed under seal. In terms of the question of whether the public has an interest in knowing amounts paid for licenses, this court stated in Apple v. Samsung that a generalized interest is not sufficient to overcome a compelling interest in filing something under seal. In that case, there were entities that said, yes, we want to know these amounts. We want to know how much Apple and Samsung are paying or earning for these things. And this court said, no, that is not relevant. What is relevant is whether the particular documents are necessary to understand the outcome of the case. And in this instance, the individual licensing amounts, the individual names, are not relevant.
But these cases are all fact-specific. And your case is different from all the other ones. And the district judges are not bound by each other's rulings in the Northern District of California. And in this case, the case started by your side with issuing an overbroad executive order request. And this is how we got to where we are. And the judge, on taking our opinion, did a particularized look at the various issues and made his ruling. How can we say he's wrong? There's no binding precedent in the Ninth Circuit or anywhere else that controls this unique situation that you created.
Well, Your Honors, yes, we created the situation, and it was a mistake to have broadly requested the sealing that we did. I'm not going to rehash that. However, this court looked at that and said, okay, under the local rules, that was an overbroad request, and therefore, Unilock, you've lost all confidentiality. But as to these third-party documents, you, the district court, have not looked at this. You need to go look at this and make a decision. This court did the same thing again in Apple v. Samsung. It was faced with the district court judge who had said, no, I'm not going to seal this. It's a fact-specific question. It came before this court, and this court had, in a 3-0 decision, said, no, this was a mistake. You were relying upon things that may not form the basis for forcing disclosure, or at the very least, they don't counterbalance the compelling state interest, or the compelling interest of the individual entity. This actually brings up a point that the intervenor EFF constantly makes, which I think, frankly, doesn't hold water. And it's the argument that Unilock is reversing the presumption of confidentiality. I am telling you, we hold the burden of establishing that these documents may be filed under seal. If you look at our brief, the very first line of the section of law is, documents filed with the court are presumed to be accessible to the public to allow the public to hold the courts accountable for their reasoning. But, although they are presumed public, we can rebut that presumption by establishing compelling evidence, compelling interest. And we see that, for example, in the Microsoft settlement agreement. When we first came before Judge Alsop asking to seal these documents back in 2018, Microsoft said, no, nothing may be made public. Judge Alsop issued his ruling in 2018. He went back to Microsoft, and Microsoft, you know what? Okay, you can release all of the information other than the licensing amount. Please keep that under seal. And the Assistant General Counsel of Microsoft submitted a sworn declaration. His declaration laid out in detail the harm that would befall Microsoft if it was made public. I'm not going to quote it at length here. It's in the public record. But the short of it is that Microsoft be put at a competitive disadvantage if it were forced to have this information put into the public due to information asymmetry. Every licensing executive would tell you information asymmetry is the most dangerous thing that can happen in a licensing negotiation. If the other side knows how much you've paid for licenses in the past, and you don't know what they've accepted for payments, it's an imbalance, and it can make it very difficult to negotiate. Now, we have to balance that real world and recognize in scores every single opinion out of the Northern District of California, other than from this one judge. We have to recognize that real world harm against the public's interest in this case.
Well, you're arguing the issue. The issue has been decided by a district judge, and then the question is abuse of discretion or error of law, or failure, and I haven't heard you mention this, failure to follow our remand instruction.
Yes, Your Honor, and I am saying that he made an abuse of discretion in weighing these generalized public interests on the one hand, and also saying that for some reason these individualized licenses are relevant and should be weighed against the compelling interest of the licensees in having their licenses file under seal. To do so was, in two respects, a mistake of law. He made the mistake of law by weighing it against the generalized public interest. Whatever interest the public might have in knowing licensing terms, that, under Apple v. Samsung, is not a basis on which to disclose individual licenses. Then in this case, we have, for example, again, Microsoft, which has expressed strong compelling interest in having its documents filed under seal. And that was weighed by the district court not as to the relevance of that one license, because that one license doesn't matter. Whether Microsoft paid Unilock a peppercorn or $10 million doesn't matter. What matters is whether Unilock earned a total of $20 million in the aggregate between April 1st, 2016 and March 31st, 2017. It didn't. But the individual license payments are not relevant to figuring that out. This example is borne out by the other 108 lines of licenses that we see in the conformed revenue sharing and note and warrant purchase agreement at 732 to 734. It was a mistake of law. It was an abuse of discretion. And again, I realize I keep on saying this, but every other judge, every single one of them, has recognized that in the Electronic Arts, in the Ninth Circuit says, this is to be sealed. The other document I want to address briefly is...
And so what's the relevance of every other judge having ruled differently?
The relevance is that this is an abuse of discretion because it is a violation of law. Every one of those judges recognizes. In fact, Judge Alsop himself, if you look at the procedural history of this case, he initially rejected our request for to file under seal. We went back, we retrenched 90% of the redactions. We filed a motion for reconsideration. He denied that, saying, no, patent licenses should be made public. Literally the next week, he issued another opinion in which he cited In Re Electronic Arts for the proposition that patent licenses should be filed under seal, and he sealed it in that case. And he did so with far less evidence than in our cases. If you look at all the declarations that he previously accepted, if you look at all the opinions, in each of those situations, you had a party that was similarly situated, or in some respects, worsely situated than we are, or that the 109 licensees are. There is a vast amount of evidence in this case saying this will hurt us in the real world. And it was an abuse of discretion, it was a mistake of law to say, well, the generalized public interest outweighs your individual interest in keeping this information under seal. That was the mistake of law. That was the abuse of discretion. That's with respect to the license information.
Why was it a mistake of law?
Because In Re Electronic Arts already forecloses this. In Re Electronic Arts said that this sort of information is clearly a trade secret and should be sealed. This has already been settled in the Ninth Circuit. This court recognized it much in Apple v. Samsung when this court quoted the language I began my discussion with.
In its remand order, did the court consider whether or not the information was trade secret? Was that analysis performed?
Yes and no. The court recognized, the district court below recognized that there was a vast array of evidence provided for him. But then he then discounted it for a number of reasons. For example, he said that it was hearsay, and therefore he was going to ignore it. This ignores 13 declarations. It also ignores my declaration. It also ignores the fact that under the local rules, there is nothing that prohibits reliance upon hearsay information. In fact, nobody, other than in this one case, nobody has found a situation where the Northern District of California has ever said you can't use hearsay to establish a motion to file under seal. And if you look in our reply brief, we cited no fewer than 13 instances where the district court, including the court on appeal, specifically relied on hearsay declarations from outside counsel.
But they also mentioned that these were stale. These were from earlier on. No effort was made to update anything.
They were stale,
after
Your Honor.
The remand.
They were stale, Your Honor. But, Your Honor, when this court remanded, it did so with specific instructions. This court said specifically that it was remanding to consider the materials that had already been put into the record. This court looked at the record. It was voluminous. It said, well, as to Unilock, sorry, you violated the local rules. You're out of luck. Fine, that was our mistake. But as to the third parties, the district court did not weigh the evidence. And so it was remanded to consider that evidence. There was no inclination, there was no indication that we would need to go back to those third parties again and ask for more evidence again. If you look at the joint appendix at 503, you see the remand order from this court. The remand order said there are a number of declarations already in the record. The district court did not appear to consider these, so we are remanding for that court to consider this information. The other document I'd like to bring up is the fortress, so-called fortress memorandum, and that has slightly different issues. The third page lists 55 licenses, and for the reasons I've already discussed, that licensing information we believe should be redacted. As to the first two pages, however, it has slightly different issues. Specifically, those pages lay out the analysis by Fortress of its investments in Unilock and considers whether to provide more money, more investments, more loans to Unilock. This is the classic sort of trade secret information that we see throughout every court, frankly, in this country. The argument for not filing this under seal was that it was not provided by the party, by Fortress. My firm represents Fortress. I represent Fortress. We reviewed those documents.
That's irrelevant, though, isn't it?
The basis for concluding that these documents shouldn't be filed under seal was that there was no declaration from the producing party. The Fortress memorandum was produced by Fortress. And, again, was produced by my firm on behalf of Fortress. And when we sought to seal that document in the 358 case, the court said, no, I understand this is a declaration from Mr. Jacobs, but it's not from a producing counsel, and therefore I'm going to ignore it, and therefore you didn't follow the rules.
Were you acting as a fact witness?
Was I acting as a fact witness? No more so than the declarants in all of those other cases, including the last 50 pages worth of the joint appendix, in which outside counsel stated the basis for filing documents under seal. That's how I did that. This court below knew that we represented Fortress.
You are into your rebuttal time.
Oh.
And so why don't you,
Your Honor.
Listen to Apple, and we'll save you 2 minutes.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Your Honor.
And I don't see Ms. Moss for EFF. Is that because you consider you're not a party and shouldn't be at the council table? Well, I think you should set up here. You are, of course, not a party, but that issue is behind us. Mr. Winard.
May it please the court, Doug Winard on behalf of Apple. Apple agrees that there was an abuse of discretion below. I think the clearest way we can see this is what the district court ordered to be unsealed versus the reasoning given in the opinion. The district court ordered unsealed a table listing 109 third-party licensees. The only reasoning given was that the district court felt that the dates and dollar amounts went to, quote, the heart of the dispute. But even if we give full credit to the district court's statement, there's only about a third of those licenses that were actually relevant. As counsel for Unilock pointed out, the only relevant time frame for Apple's motion and the district court's resolution of it was from April 1st, 2016 until March 31, 2017. So that's the only period of time that's going to be relevant. That only implicates about a third of those licenses. So the remaining two-thirds have absolutely no relevance to Apple's motion or to the district court's resolution of it. And yet the district court ordered all of that information unsealed. Likewise, the district court again said that dates and dollar amounts went to the heart of the dispute. It did not say the identities. But nevertheless, the district court, in its ruling, unsealed all of the material, including the identities of all 109 licensees. But there was no basis in the district court's opinion for that decision, except for legally improper bases. And those are the ones outlined at the beginning in Appendix 33 and in Appendix 34, where the district court says patent licenses carry unique considerations. That's not part of Ninth Circuit law, nor is it part of this decision in Apple v. Samsung applying Ninth Circuit law. Patent licenses, just like any other type of license, are to be analyzed as, would the disclosure of this information cause competitive harm? Here we have numerous declarations, including from Microsoft and others, explaining that the disclosure of this information will cause information asymmetry. It will harm them in future negotiations with other patentees or other patent assertion entities who now have information about what Microsoft or these other third parties paid that they wouldn't be able to get reciprocal information from that entity. So there is a clear competitive harm there. And if we balance that against the licenses that are outside that one-year window, where there's outside that one-year window, there is no public interest. The public has no reason or need to see that information because it had absolutely no bearing on the calculation of the $14 million. That $14 million is looking at a one-year window. Nor is the identity of any licensee relevant because it doesn't matter who paid how much. All that mattered was the aggregate figure. So then we look at, okay, what about in that one-year window? What's the public's interest in that? And that interest remains de minimis because the calculation of that $14 million was undisputed by the parties, taken as uncontested by the district court.
So you're actually the appellant in this case, huh?
We agree with Unilock.
You won this case, and now you're arguing with the plaintiff.
Apple is taking the same position it took in the prior appeal, which is that the third-party licensing information is sealable information.
Well, in the prior appeal, you didn't say much at all.
So you're, in the prior appeal, we defended the district court on the grounds of its application of the local rules, in particular, Local Rule 79.5 regarding filings under seal and Local Rule 7.9 regarding motions for reconsideration. But we noted at the end of our briefing and at oral argument, and it shows up in footnote 9 of the court's prior opinion, that the table of information regarding third-party licensees is sealable information. That is the type of trade secret information that the Ninth Circuit has held can be protected as a trade secret. It provides a compelling reason to seal over and above what would normally be the presumption of the public's right of access. So yes, Your Honor, that is correct. We disagreed with Unilock in about 98-99%, which is why we defended the district court on those local rule applications, but we did agree with them on that one sliver, this third-party information. That's the last piece left. Nothing else is at issue in this appeal, and on that third-party information, we agree with Unilock on this, that the district court made an error by unsealing the entire table, including the identities of the licensees that had no relevance to Apple's motion or to the district court's resolution of it, as well as the unsealing of any information about licenses that were outside the one-year window that was actually pertinent to Apple's motion. But even within that window, Apple would still submit it as a first request that it should still remain under seal because it's still the public's interest is de minimis. As I was explaining. It's not contested. It wasn't a matter of factual dispute between the parties that the court had to resolve as to how much license revenue was generated. It was an uncontested fact. And there was a 30B6 witness, a corporate representative, who testified to the calculation, and that testimony is in the public record. So he explained, this is how much was generated over this period of time. So at that point, we have to have a stopping point at some point in terms of, does the public get the right to ask if that witness did the calculation right, or does the public have the right to look at all of the individual licenses?
Well, when we have cases with people like you and him on opposite sides, the public interest loses. You have no interest in the public interest.
I understand that, Your Honor. I believe EFF.
But the Supreme Court has spoken very loudly about it.
Certainly, and, Your Honor.
He didn't mention anything about the Supreme Court Richmond newspapers case.
Certainly, Your Honor. Obviously, there is that issue when parties to a case have at least some converging interest in sealing material. I will say that in this case, we were not on Unilock's side for 99% of this. And
well,
so we did. We are for this last remaining information, but that's because it's implicating both third-party licensing information as well as Apple's own. We've filed things under seal in this case, and we don't think that the district court's application of Ninth Circuit law was an appropriate application of that law, and we have our own interest in maintaining our materials under seal in this case and would not want to see a ruling that would allow further challenges to what we believe is properly under seal. If there are no further questions, Apple will see the remainder of its time.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Moss. Now, you are here not because you're a party and not because you filed an amicus brief indicating your interest that we have granted you a right to file. You're here because the district court was dissatisfied that no party before it was representing the position that he favored. Is that right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
We're here because the public has a powerful interest in this case, and as this court recognized, there's a strong presumption of public access to these records. There's one big difference since the last time we were here, which is that the district court has now dismissed the case and granted Apple's second motion. The only evidence in the record of the operative fact, of the fact that Fort Unilock didn't make its monetary goal, is the evidence in that licensing table. What counsel just referenced about expert testimony, that is the first I have heard of that. I have scrutinized the record. I have not seen any other evidence of the figure. And the district court, in its opinion, didn't cite to anything. And in the parties' briefs, when they say the information is in the record, they either cite to the district court opinion, or in one case, in Apple's brief, it cites to sealed material.
Well, this case isn't moot. I haven't seen a motion by the parties to dismiss it.
The underlying patent case was dismissed by the district court, and that standing decision, that dismissal, is not on appeal. The parties didn't challenge that.
But the question of sealing the record is properly on appeal to us.
Correct.
Okay, now, why wasn't it an error of law for the district court to talk about a patent owner being a tenant on a public land? This plot of land didn't exist until the patent did. It created something new. And the district court said the public has an interest in inspecting the valuation of the patent right. The public has an interest to ensure that the procurement of a patent is proper, that it be free of fraud and misrepresentation. But where has there ever been a proper governing holding that the public has an interest in how much people license a patent for?
I share some of Your Honor's misgivings about, I think we need to be careful about real property analogies to intellectual property. But I think the party's characterization of that analysis is an erroneous reading of the district court's opinion. The first public interest that the district court identified is the public's interest in understanding the judicial process and in being able to look over the shoulders of the fact finder to make sure their decisions are correct. And then what the district court said was conclusive to its decision to uphold the strong presumption of access is the fact that what these court records show, those facts, go to the heart of the standing decision. In the hearing, it said these facts were highly relevant to my decision. That's what the district court explicitly said was conclusive. I believe the district court then, and because of the arguments, some of which you've heard, that suggest a categorical or per se rule for sealing patent licenses, which is also not the case. And it should be noted that there are many patent owners that publicly list their patent licensees, that want the amounts of their licenses to be known, that admit them into the public record for damages evidence so that people know their rights are enforced and respected. It's not a general, there's no categorical rule of sealing, period. It is always a fact-specific inquiry. But there's also not a general or a uniform expectation that this information shouldn't be public. And given the arguments presented about a per se rule of sealing patent licenses, I think the district court's language about the public interest is really secondary to the Supreme Court's language, which has repeatedly recognized that the public's interest in the patent system is paramount. And understanding how patent owners use the courts.
But not in the amount of royalties, the details of patent licenses. The Supreme Court has never stated there's a public interest in that, has it?
I agree that it hasn't. It hasn't said there's a generalized public interest in each and every patent license. I think it turns on the facts of the case. And the Supreme Court, certainly in MedImmune and in Lear, has made decisions about patent licenses and talked about those licenses, and they weren't under seal. So I agree that the language of the district court's opinion, you know, of course, this court is reviewing its substance
but
of its
language,
judgment.
Languages express reasoning, and reasoning provides the legal basis for a decision. And if the language shows that the reasoning was wrong, then the decision needs to be reversed.
And I think the operative language is what the district court said was conclusive. What is conclusive is the fact that these facts go to the heart of the matter. That is the language that is conclusive, and that the district court, you don't have to take my word about what was highly relevant to the district court's decision or what was central to it.
Counsel, do you agree with what Apple said in terms of the fact that outside that time frame, April 2016 to March 2017, would not be relevant to the disputed issue?
Those arguments weren't before the court, and I can't see any of the entries on the license. So none of those arguments were made about the time frame, and I have no idea if it's true. What I will say is that there are 109 entries on that table. For 78 of those entries, Unilock provided either no evidence to support sealing or contradictory evidence. Two of those licensees explicitly consented to disclose the amounts and dates of their licenses, but Unilock is still trying to seal them. So I don't know if of that third that are allegedly relevant, if that includes any of the licensees that submitted declarations, or if that includes the two who consented to disclosure. You know, I can't see the dates, and so I can't attest to that. And certainly that wasn't, you know, an argument made below. I would also argue that in this case, on the standing decision, which again isn't before this court because it wasn't appealed, you know, Unilock argued first that there was no default, and then that if there was a default, it was cured. And I would suspect that the dates of the licenses could be very relevant to see whether those arguments were plausible. You know, if Unilock was getting a peppercorn per license, then the might not be so plausible to think that Fortress considered no default or considered it cured. If Unilock was getting, you know, $5 million a license, including, you know, in the year before or 2 years before, it might then be quite plausible to think there was no meaningful default or that the contracting party would think it was cured.
Well, then how about this? Do you agree that the public does not have an interest in licensing information that's not relevant to the dispute? So we don't have to give it a specific time frame, but do you agree that the public has no interest in that information?
Well, the starting point is the public has an interest in what happens in the courts. The public there's a strong presumption of public interest and access to materials that are attached to a dispositive motion. So I think the public has a strong interest in knowing what information was before the court. If that information happens to be the dates and lump sum payments of licenses, then the public has an interest in knowing. And these arguments about what was relevant or not, the district court should at least get deference about what was relevant to their own decision making. You know, and an important distinction, though Electronic Arts has talked about a lot, these are not royalty rates. These are lump sum payments. They do not say anything about the products to which they relate. They do not say anything about the patents to which they relate. These are lump sum payments. And so they do not show anything about the licensee's business. And presumably that's why it was why 76 of them were silent, not only when supposedly contacted in 2019, but after this court's ruling, and why two of the licensees affirmatively consented to the disclosure of the amounts that they paid and the dates, and there's no justification for keeping those under seal. It was not an abuse of discretion for the district court to refuse to seal information that the licensees consented to seal. And I want to also point out that in the district court standing decision, it made clear that it was reversing itself, because it concluded that Unilock had misrepresented facts in the first standing decision that led it to commit a clear error. It was none of the cases cited involved that fact pattern. It was not an abuse of discretion for the district court not to accept the assertions from Unilock, from none of the parties for those 78 entries, when relying on those assertions had previously led the district court to commit clear error. I want to emphasize that what was conclusive to the district court was the fact that the operative fact of the standing issue was, what did Unilock earn? How much did it make on its licenses? This is the record evidence of that amount. The parties could have filed a stipulation. They did not. Unilock could have provided other evidence in that second standing motion. It did not. It could have offered at any point to seal the names of the licensees and respect their privacy interests that way. Instead, it unsealed them in order to double down on an effort to seal the dates and amounts.
So you're disavowing so many of the statements which might look like statements of law about the patent system, but you're arguing affirmance on the basis of lack of abuse of discretion with respect to the specific data in this case relating to the $20 million.
I'm disavowing my friend's reading of the district court opinion based on...
I was reading what the judge himself said.
And I respectfully think, right in light of the hearing transcript, I think that it comes across more clearly there how much of the district court's decision on standing was informed by the significance of these facts to their standing decision and to the lack of compelling support that Unilock provided. It's also worth noting that 78 licensees either consented or were silent. Of those that did submit or declarations or make statements, the vast majority are completely sealed. So the district court could not go into great depth about their contents because they were under seal. And I very much hope, we haven't seen those, and I very much hope that this court will scrutinize the entirely sealed material, because there is no precedent to support sealing material based on sealed material. And though I can't see what's in it, I find it hard to understand how the rationale for sealing, how that argument could require sealing itself. So to circle back, I believe that the district court's decision, what was conclusive, was the relevance of these facts to the standing decision. And I believe that the statements about the public's interest were not conclusive of its decision, and that its ultimate judgment rested on it upholding the strong presumption of access based on the insufficient submissions and the significance of the facts to its merits decision on dismissal. Are there any further questions from the court?
Apparently not. Thank you, counsel. Unilock has 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Three very quick points. First, the district court's substantive opinion was appealed at 20-21-1572. Thereafter, Apple and Unilock settled, and so the appeal was dismissed, but it was appealed. Second, in addition to appearing on behalf of Fortress, we specifically noted, for example, in the appendix at 888 through 889, that we represented Fortress, and we informed the court of this before the hearing, before the order. So the court knew that my declaration was also on behalf of Fortress. The last thing I want to point out is my esteemed opposing counsel noted that the district court said that these facts go to the heart of his decision. He had originally said, no, Unilock has standing, and then in his second order said, 180-degree change, now Unilock doesn't have standing. And he said, this goes to the heart of the matter. At the appendix at page 897, quote, our facts are uncontested, continuing, and discovery now reveals, this part's in italics, the Unilocks took no action to remedy any default, and no one even discussed what steps the parties might take to cure the default. So the new evidence that goes to the heart of the matter was there was no evidence. These documents, the 109 licenses, those were literally in the first exhibit filed in the first motion to seal. Your Honors, I began my presentation earlier today by quoting the Ninth Circuit's INRI Electronic Arts. In that case, Judge Ossoff, of all judges, should have known the import of INRI Electronic Arts. After all, when the Ninth Circuit reversed a district court for abusing discretion for failing to seal licensing information, the district judge on appeal in that case was Judge Ossoff. The Ninth Circuit found in that case that he abused his discretion for failing to seal licensing information. For the reasons stated earlier today in our briefing, Unilock suggests that he should be reversed again. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.